Hey, this is W2OP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, I'll just say your name and your role with the show.
I am Nick Cartel, and I play Jean Valjean.
This is in Les Miserables at Kennedy Center Opera House from April 11th to the 29th, so only a couple weeks, so you guys got to get your tickets now. Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, so whenever I have someone on, I want to get to the show in a second, but I want to know like your experience with it. You know, like when did you first encounter Les Mis, you know, growing up or otherwise? You know, what was your initial exposure to it? Was it the movie? Was it a live show? What was it?
So my first kind of exposure to Les Mis was the 10th anniversary concert on PBS with Colm Wilkinson. And I remember sitting in my living room watching it, just being captivated by what I was seeing. And at that moment, I was like, I want to play Marius. That is who I want to play. And then about, I would say about 20 years ago, I had the opportunity in a regional production to play Marius. And then in 2017, it kind of came back around and I auditioned for Valjean this time. And then I took the tour out for 2.5 years in 2017 to 2019. And then I left right before the pandemic and now I'm back post-pandemic. So it really is a full circle for me.
Awesome. And I guess before we dive too far in, I'm assuming all our listeners know the story of Les Mis, because, you know, it's been around forever. But just in case maybe there's some newbies listening to this, or maybe they saw it a while ago and forgot, whatever the case is, give us the basic, you know, premise of the show, you know, the basic setup with, the, you know, who the characters are and stuff.
Yeah. So the story kind of centers around my character, Jean Valjean. He gets out of prison after 19 years for doing a horrible crime, which is stealing a loaf of bread.
Oh, my God.
Then he I know. Can you believe it?
Was it a marble rye like Seinfeld? Or?
It was a very nice French baguette.
Nice.
He's an outcast of society, and he meets a bishop who takes pity on him and brings him into his home, gives him, you know, the food off his table, the wine, and Jean Valjean, in a moment of really feeling like he is an outcast, decides that he's going to steal the silver so he can turn his life around in some way, shape, or form. And he gets arrested again, but the bishop this time forgives him. And not only says, no, I gave him this silver, but he also gives him 2 silver candlesticks and tells Valjean that now he has saved his life. He has changed his life. And now he has to do good with this. And it really sets Valjean, his life on a different trajectory than it was originally supposed to be on. And it really transforms Valjean and it makes him become compassionate to others. And all throughout the course, then you follow Valjean throughout his life. He meets with Fantine. He then, you know, Fantine passes away. He adopts her daughter. And it is all of the story of redemption, sacrifice, love, and really a survival of the human spirit that Valjean has as his life, as we watch him grow into old age and, you know, eventually through the end of his life, and all while set in France and in a moment of strife and unrest with these students. And also you're seeing Valjean and his sacrifice for his adopted daughter, Cosette, along with all of these students that he encounters and all the people that he meets throughout his life.
Awesome. Thanks for the reminder. I know it probably seems redundant to us and musical,
you know,
theater fans.
It's hard to kind of encapsulate that in a sound bite when it's a 3-hour musical.
Well, you know what? It's good. I need a soundbite of the, you know, the quote plot summary, the premise. So, you know, you're helping me out. So thank you. And remind everyone, you know, that's sort of, you know, the storyline, but remind everyone sort of the history of the show itself, because I believe it started as like a Victor Hugo novel back in like, I don't know, 1860s, 1862, something like that. But the musical version that we all know, like the Broadway musical, was what? 1980, started in Paris, I believe, before Broadway.
Yeah,
am I getting that
yeah.
right?
That is correct. Yeah, it started in the 80s back in Paris. It started in Paris. And then Cameron McIntosh, who's the producer on the musical, came on board after there was a concept album recorded. He brought it over to the UK and the rest is history. Now it's been running on the West End for 37 years. It's played in every country imaginable. It has been translated into practically every language imaginable. And it is still the world's most popular musical. And it's been running nonstop. And I think there is a a connection that audiences have with the show because of what Victor Hugo wrote. He wrote about characters that people can relate to at all different points in their lives. You're seeing people, you're meeting audiences at the stage door that are connecting to, when they were younger, they connected to the students like I did when I first saw the show. I connected to Marius and Cosette and Eponine and you know, the younger characters that are fighting for change in their own world. And now we're meeting audience members that, you know, are older and they're bringing their children to see the show for the first time. And they're connecting with the more parental figures like Valjean and Fantine. And so it is a full circle moment for so many people. And that, I think, is due to not only the story that Victor Hugo wrote, but the beautiful music by Claude-Michel Schoenberg and Alain Boublil. And they are, you know, are able to connect such a moment in time to the first time they saw it to when they're coming back to see it again.
You're talking about moments in time too. Like, speak to how timely it is too, because, you know, obviously the story, when it's, you know, it's dealing with, you know, revolution in France, you know, the revolutionary period, all these young idealists attempting to overthrow the government. There's the famous image at the end, you know, on the big street barricade in Paris. Talk about how, you know, right now we have like Ukraine trying to get independence from Russia, which is crazy. They already were, but now they're fighting for it again because they've been invaded. But like, you know, I mean, I don't know. Talk about how sort of, I guess the themes are sort of timely, no matter when it's staged.
They truly are. And I think that because it is, it's students, what the students are fighting for in the show is they are fighting for education for all. But regardless of when we set the show, regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on, there is something about this show that is, it is people that are fighting to be heard. It is people that are fighting for their place in this world. It is people to be fighting for a better life. And it no matter when you set the show, but especially coming off of this post-pandemic, when there is something that connected our world as one, and it is this survival of the human spirit that we have fought to get to where we are now. And then you see continuing, like you were just saying, about the, you know, the war that's happening in Ukraine, and that group of people that are fighting for their country, they're fighting to be heard. And it's amazing how no matter when we set this show, no matter when we are performing this show, there is always something in our own world, in our own lives, that our audiences connect with because they are seeing what's happening on the news or they are seeing what's happening in their own lives. And it's one of the staying powers of Les Mis.
Absolutely. So much staying power. But the biggest staying power is something you sort of hinted at. You mentioned it briefly, but I want to do a deeper dive into the music. Obviously, it is what keeps us coming back to this thing. Remind our listeners that it's, you know, it's not a spoken dialogue scene and then a spoken dialogue and a song like other musicals. Talk about how it's sort of, I believe this one still, right? Like usual, it's sung all the way through, right?
That is correct. It's 3 hours sung all the way through. But you have songs like I Dreamed a Dream and Stars and On My Own and Bring Him Home and One Day More. You have hits that have, like, it's amazing. Our resident director was talking the other day. He was saying that it's like hit after hit after hit after hit. You've had songs, these songs have been recorded by pop stars, and yet they are still, so it's kind of like in the ether. You might not even know that you know this song until you start hearing the music and you're like, oh right, that song, that's in this too. And again, it's one of the reasons why this show is so popular, because you come in and you are transported with this music. There is something that just happens physically every night to me when I hear the beginning of One Day More. We call them the magic notes, the do 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 do. As soon as I hear those, I get goosebumps over my entire body. exactly. That's what everybody does. So we have, you know, our audiences are coming in and they're singing and they're leaving humming the tunes, and they're, you know, do you hear the people sing these rousing anthems that we connect with and our audiences love, and we love performing every night.
Oh, I love it. And that's such a good point, that people will hear the songs and not know where they know them. You know, they, you know, with I Dreamed a Dream, you know, if they didn't see the Anne Hathaway Oscar winning performance of it in those,
correct,
you know, the close ups, that scene's burned into our brains. Right. But then if they didn't see that, they heard Susan Boyle sing it on Britain's Got Talent. You know what I mean? Like in pop culture everywhere, everyone knows these songs.
Aretha Franklin recorded I Dreamed a Dream.
Right.
Like that's so it's it, no matter there are so many songs that have been recorded and that have been done on just television that have been used for, you know, political events and all of these things that, again, people don't even know that they know until they step foot in that theater. They're like, oh, that's what this is from.
Yep. Aretha Franklin. I think Neil Diamond. I think so many people have covered I Dreamed a Dream. Awesome. Well, do you have a I mentioned One Day More and I Dreamed a Dream. Those are like the really, really famous ones. But do you have like a let's say maybe like an underrated one, you know, from that you sort of stand either on stage or, you know, in the wings listening to your castmates? Like, is there one every night that just you're like, I got to take a moment and just soak this one in?
You know, for me, my favorite song to perform every night is Bring Him Home. It is a moment where Valjean sits on the barricade. He's come to the barricade at that point to find Marius, this boy that is in love with his daughter and his daughter is in love with. And, you know, when I did the show in 2017, I just lost my mom to ovarian cancer. And so
oh,
it was
so
a moment
sorry.
That I could connect. Thank you. She battled for 5 years, such a strong force in my life. And so to sit on that barricade as Valjean and to think about the sacrifices that Valjean was going to make for his daughter in the show and that he was going to protect this boy and try to get this boy safe, then I was able to connect that to the sacrifices that my mom made for me while she was battling her disease. And, you know, and she never got to see me in Les Mis, but all the other shows that I was doing, she would travel to come and she would do chemo and then get on a plane and travel to come and see me. And so it was a moment that I could connect with that. Well, now coming back post-pandemic, my wife and I had a daughter during the pandemic. Right at the beginning, we had a little girl. And so now me sitting on that barricade as Valjean thinking about my own daughter and how I would do anything for her. It is one of those moments that I love doing every night because it's so simple. And yet it means so much to me. There's such a connection that I have in that moment. And to be able to sing that song with our orchestra is a dream come true.
Oh my gosh, you are ripping my heart out in ways you don't even know. I'm so, like, so sorry about your mom. And congrats on the daughter. I don't even
Thank
know
you.
What to say. I mean, wow. Okay. Where do we pivot from that? I need a minute. Let's compose ourselves.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the music. Tell me about sort of the visual elements here, like, you know, the costumes and maybe like the period backdrops. Like, how do you recreate 19th century France? And I know we're a radio station, so try to paint us a visual picture of the period, you know. Glory we're going to see.
So what's amazing is that when Les Mis premiered in the 80s, right, it was revolutionary with its set design because it had this giant turntable on stage that really helped to provide the space and time. You know, people were walking on stage and the stage was moving underneath them. So you got that sense of movement. And when they kind of went back and they were reimagining this show, they did away with the turntable. But what they added were these beautiful projections. So many people don't know that Victor Hugo was also an incredible artist. And so they went back and they really dug into, I guess, the archives and the history. And they found some of his artwork and they included it as projections in our show. And so not only do you have this story that Victor Hugo wrote, but then you also have his artwork. So when you walk in and the first thing that you see is this beautiful watercolor drop of his version of what Paris looked like. And that's actually his watercolor that they have put on stage. And so you will see his signature at the very bottom of that drop. And then we use projections throughout the show to help set us in a time and a place, and to actually, you will actually feel like you are marching down the streets of Paris at the end of Act One with the students going off to battle. You're going to feel like you're traveling and you're walking with Valjean through the sewers as the projections are moving, and you're going to feel that time and place. And I think that it really helps to envelop our audience. It gives it a very cinematic feel, which I think helps the story move along. So you might sit there for 3 hours, but you don't feel like it's 3 hours because it's constantly moving. There's constantly a shift in light and a sense in shift in the projection that you're seeing, the story, along with these beautiful sets that are in some respects kind of minimal with these staircases, but yet they truly create our world every single night. It's astounding what our crew does. It's astounding what is packed into 11 tractor trailers that travel across the country for us, that really help to bring our story to life every night.
Wow. It is a lavish production, and it's the best of the best that's trucked across the country, and it's going to be coming to the Kennedy Center. It's going to be awesome. I just want to tell everybody, you know, even the Kennedy Center website, and you said it a few seconds ago, it's billing it as still the world's most popular musical. When you say that, what's like the evidence behind that? Is that like in box office, or do you know?
You know, I think it's in box office, but I think it's just also in staying power. I mean, sure. There is no other musical on this planet that has run for 37 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, 37 years.
At least according to the Kennedy Center, it says seen by over 130 million people worldwide in 53 countries and 22 languages. So I guess that if that's not a claim to the world's most popular musical title, then I don't know what is, but... very cool. Well, what did you take? You said you're playing Valjean, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what did you make of the Hugh Jackman role and getting to see him sing? I know we've seen Greatest Showman since, but I think back then everyone just thought of him as Wolverine and they didn't know he had the singing chops.
So I knew that he had the singing chops. He was a stage actor in Australia and on the West End before he was cast as Wolverine. It's actually funny. He was doing a production of Oklahoma on the West End playing Curly when he booked Wolverine. So I knew of him being a singer and I had seen him on Broadway. So, you know, watching him do that role, you've got big shoes to fill. So, you know, there's a responsibility. I think that when you hear that Les Mis is coming to town, right? Or you're an audience member and you might be seeing it for the first time, or maybe you're seeing it for the 10th time, there's a responsibility that we as actors have to such a piece that has been running for 37 years. And everybody will have their favorite Valjean. They will have their favorite Marius. They will have their favorite Fantine, all of these characters. And so we have a responsibility as actors to not only do justice to those that have come before us, i.e. for me, it's Hugh Jackman, it's Colm Wilkinson, it's, you know, Alfie Beau, all of these amazing men that have played this role before me, but also to make it our own. Because I can't be a carbon copy of anybody else. And my Valjean is going to be different than Colm's was, you know, back in the 80s. So there's a responsibility that we have to play these roles and to create them and to create this story for ourselves on stage, but also for our audiences. So the fact that I am playing a role that Hugh Jackman has played on film is not lost on me. That is a big undertaking. But I think it's cool that we're in a brotherhood now, that I can say that I'm in a brotherhood of actors that have played a role that has been in a musical and has run the longest than any other show.
That's a big deal. You'll forever be spoken in the same sentence as those legends. So that's awesome. All right, cool. Well, I have more than enough to work with. Thank you so much. You're giving me gold here, both on, you know, just creative stuff and heart tugging stuff. So thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I guess to end it, pretend I'm not even here and like you're speaking directly to our listeners, like, you know, hey, DC, come on out to Les Mis at Kennedy Center. You're going to have a good time or whatever you want to say.
Yeah. Hey, Washington, DC, we are so excited to play the Kennedy Center. What is really cool is Les Miserables previewed at the Kennedy Center in the 80s before it went to Broadway. And this version of the show without the turntable has never played the Kennedy Center before until now. So we hope that you will join us. We're only there for 3 weeks. Please get your tickets. I know that we are selling very quickly, but I can tell you that this cast is so excited to get there and to perform on that grand stage of yours. So please come and see us.
Thank you so much. Yes, that cool tidbit. And it was 1986 to be exact that Kennedy Center hosted pre-Broadway. And you know what? That's why DC's underrated. You know, West Side Story was at National Theater before it went to Broadway. And Dear Evan Hansen, and more recent example, was at Arena Stage before it went to New York. So Les Mis is in good company.
National tour. Yeah. It's
yeah,
great.
That's true. What was it? A Strange Loop did a really early one at Woolly Mammoth here before Broadway. So yeah, I mean it's really cool when you give me a good local angle like that.
Yeah, but, and honestly, the last time that the tour played and the previous times that the tour played, it's always played at the National Theater. So the fact that we actually get to play the Kennedy Center this time is really cool.
Oh, it's a whole different vibe. Yeah. You're in the Kennedy Center Opera House where they have the Kennedy Center honors, you know what I mean? So it's a fancy
exactly.
It's a fancy spot.
Exactly.
All right, cool. Well, thanks so much for doing this. Again, it's Les Miserables at the Kennedy Center, April 11th through 29th. So get your tickets now. Hey, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you so much, Jason.